Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm just getting over a cold.
Oh yeah, we're both getting over the flu. Actually, all three of us are getting over the flu, so we might sound a little bit off today. Collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking about focal segmental glomerular...
sclerosis.
I said it earlier, glomerulosclerosis with John Rankin. John is the founder and CEO of Go Be More Apparel and has been an ambassador for the National Kidney Foundation since 2009. He's also a copywriter and a copy editor. Last year, he also funded a marketing and database management company, Catchy Content Co., for mortgage loan officers and brokers. Did I mention that John is a 2020 Olympic hopeful? He was also a 2008 USATF Olympic team alternate, and he's a UCLA alum, runner, I hear. Right?
Go Bruins!
That's fantastic. John, thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful, you guys. Thank you so much for having me on and giving me a chance to share my story.
Thank you for taking the time. It sounds like you are a very, very busy person.
Yes, busy guy.
Wow. Well, John, yeah. I'm going to jump right in and ask the question, what is focal segmental, and I'm not going to be able to pronounce it.
Glomerulosclerosis. Rough name.
It is.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting name. According to the National Kidney Foundation, focal segmental glomerulosclerosis is a type of glomerular disease, and it describes scarring, sclerosis, in your kidneys. The scarring of the FSGS only takes in small sections of each glomerula or filter, and only a limited number of glomeruli are damaged at first. Like focal segmental glomerulosclerosis, it affects both children and adults, and males are affected slightly more than females, and it occurs frequently in African-Americans, and I'm an African-American.
Okay. And is there more than one type of, I'm going to abbreviate it from now on, FSGS?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to abbreviate it. it's definitely not easier to say. FSGS, according to the Mayo Clinic, there are three types of this disease. Primary FSGS, many people are actually diagnosed with FSGS, have no known cause of their disease, which is like the common thing. This is called primary or idiopathic FSGS. Then there's secondary FSGS. Several factors such as infection, drug toxicity, diseases such as diabetes or sickle cell disease, obesity, and even other kidney diseases can cause secondary FSGS. Controlling or treating the underlying cause, it often halts ongoing kidney disease and might lead to improved kidney function over time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, there's also genetic, called familial FSGS. This is a rare form of FSGS, which is caused by genetic mutations. It's actually suspected that when several members of a family show signs of FSGS, this is the cause.
Okay.
Familial FSGS can also occur when neither parent has the disease, but each carries one copy of an abnormal gene that can be passed on to the next generation.
Okay. What are the symptoms of FSGS? Sorry, Ron, I stepped on your question there.
My proverbial toes?
Yes.
You know, it's kind of interesting. According to the National Kidney Foundation, early stages may not cause any symptoms. You may only see some signs on your own, while others may be found by your healthcare provider, which is my situation.
Okay.
Signs and symptoms of FSGS include swelling in body parts like your legs, your ankles, maybe around your eyes. This is called edema, which is, again, something that I was experiencing a little bit of. Weight gain is another a symptom due to extra fluid building in your body. Foamy urine caused by high protein levels and in your urine, which is, again, one of my symptoms. That's called proteinuria. High fat levels in the blood, or high cholesterol, low levels of protein in the blood, and then FSGS can cause nephrotic syndrome, which is a set of symptoms that can happen together and affect your kidneys. I think I kind of had some form of that as well going on.
Okay.
Yep. Swelling in the body part is also something, like your legs, your ankles, and I think that those are the main symptoms that I was causing, though, was the edema and the extreme amount of protein that was spilling out into my urine.
Okay.
John, as an athlete, you must be pretty in tune with your body. Which symptoms first alerted you that you were having an issue with your kidneys?
Yeah, I was just mentioning again, like the things that stood out were the edema, the swelling, a little bit of swelling around the eyes, and the extra protein spilling in my urine. But the interesting thing was that I didn't really feel sick when I was about halfway towards kidney failure.
Wow.
Which is the scary thing about kidney disease in general. Yeah, it was actually my healthcare provider wasn't specifically my healthcare provider. It was one of the trainers and doctors at the Olympic Training Center. Routine physical were part of that physical was the urine test, mm-hmm. As they were testing all athletes in terms of how physically ready they were for the Olympic trials in 2008. And that's when it was noted that I had way too much protein in my urine. And they're like, this is a sign of kidney failure. You're halfway towards kidney failure.
Wow.
And this is a month and a half out from the Olympic trials. And I was as fit as I could be.
Oh,
that was the only way I found out was through a routine physical.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And is that how FSGS is typically diagnosed?
That's a good question. According to the American Kidney Foundation, your healthcare team may run several tests in order to diagnose your condition. These may include, but are not limited to, blood tests, urine tests, and a kidney biopsy, which all together can help determine if you have FSGS. And that's kind of the progress that I went through, was first the blood test and urine test, and then I had a kidney biopsy, which ultimately determined that I had or indicated I had early stages of FSGS.
Okay.
And as far as the tests go, a urine test will help find protein and or blood in your urine. And then the blood test will help find levels of protein, cholesterol, and waste in your blood. And then, of course, the glomerular filtration rate, or GFR, which is a common test as well. It's a blood test which will be done to help know how well your kidneys are actually filtering the waste from your body. The final test, final couple tests would be like kidney biopsy and or genetic testing. With the kidney biopsy, in this test, the tiny piece of your kidney is actually removed with a special needle and is then examined and or looked at under a microscope. And that's the big one that I had too, with the kidney biopsy, which ultimately determined again if I had that I actually had FSGS, early stages of FSGS. And then there's the genetic testing, which is also actually a pretty big one for a lot of doctors. The genetic test may be done to see if you were actually born with genes that cause your kidney disease. And that's something that a lot of doctors that I talk to, because I'm diving more into trying to represent another charity as well called UPRO Charity. And they specifically focus on research and development of treatments and cures for kidney disease.
Okay.
And they're very curious about the genetic side
right.
of my disease as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I do have one follow-up question to that. For the kidney biopsy, was that scary?
Were you awake?
Yeah. I was awake. And yes, it was quite scary for a lot of reasons. I mean, for sure, I had the biopsy right after the Olympic Games, and I had made the U.S. Olympic team as an alternate for my first Olympic team. I was 26. I was one of the fittest athletes in the world and one of the fastest runners in the world. And I'm sitting there going into a situation where all of a sudden I'm being told that I may have some type of disease, which I really didn't understand or comprehend, and that they were going to have to, put me slightly under. I was awake still, but I could feel them poking these giant needles. Three holes in my back doing the kidney biopsy thing. It was very intense, but it was weird at the same time. And I was definitely, I still kind of confused. I didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty weird thing, but I was kind of following the protocol based on all the other other results and testing that I was being put through.
Right, right. I don't know if we were going to cover this later on in the interview, but did you have family or friends that were supporting you during that time?
Well, yeah, definitely had friends and family that were supporting me, and be obviously hopeful that it was nothing in terms of that they would find nothing or that nothing was really going on. And also, it was kind of an interesting thing because they were all surprised by it. It's not something we've ever really heard of before in our family. We don't know of anybody else in our family that has had any kind of kidney disease, known to any of us. So this was kind of a little bit of a shocker.
Right. You were
kind
of the first one out of the box with that, huh?
Seems like it. Yeah. Because I asked my parents and they double checked with our family, because we're originally from the Cayman Islands. We have tons of family down there in Jamaica and Cayman, and very close to our family. So we were able to talk to a lot of people, and everybody's like, no, we haven't had any kidney disease in our family.
Okay.
John, thank you so much for, sharing all this information. Can you tell us, are there any treatment options currently available for people with FSGS now?
Yeah, Ron, that's a really good question. As far as the National Kidney Foundation, it does list several potential treatment options. The type of treatment you get, it depends on the actual cause of your kidney ailment or kidney disease. Everyone is different, and your doctor will make a treatment plan that is right for your type of FSGS. Usually, the treatments for FSGS include corticosteroids, or often it's called steroids. That was one of the ones that was definitely offered to me. Immunosuppressive drugs, plasmapheresis, ACE inhibitors, and ARBs, diuretics, and diet change. And those are some of the main ones as well. As far as the drugs go, the corticosteroids and immunosuppressive drugs, I think those are the two that was, I think, most commonly recommended. That was definitely the first two options that I was given. These medications are used to calm your immune system, your body's defense system, and stop from attacking your glomeruli. So that's what the drugs are for. Okay. They kind of help, try to stagnate the progression of the disease. Then ACE inhibitors and ARBs are blood pressure medications used to reduce protein loss and control your blood pressure. That was also something that I was offered. And then, of course, the last two, diet changes and diuretics. Diet change is definitely something that makes sense for everybody, regardless of whether or not you have an ailment. That's just something that's going to help you to, I think, fight off and ward off any of a lot of diseases, because food is like medicine. But for anybody with kidney disease, diet change is definitely be needed in reducing your salt and protein in your food choices. To lighten the load of waste on your kidneys is definitely like a really crucial thing for anybody with a kidney disease to do. And as far as diuretics, these medications actually help your body get rid of excess fluid and swelling, right, which is super important. And these can be used to lower your blood pressure as well.
And how does your treatment protocol, how is that in compared to in like a traditional treatment protocol? Because you are still, you're very, very, very active and fit. So
you need your protein.
Right. You need your proteins. And how has that affected you?
And also, I was going to ask, so we're going to just give you all kinds of stuff to answer. the corticosteroids, is that something that the Olympics would allow you to take when it's something that's medically necessary? But then when they go to take a blood test or urine test, they're going to say, he's got steroids in his system.
Yeah. As far as the protein goes, it was I definitely was I've always been more of a plant-based kind of a person, and I do try to eat most of my proteins from, if anything, from sources that are easier to digest, and easier for my body to break down. So that's kind of where my diet is gone. And as far as the protein goes, you can still try to manage it as much as I can, because you don't want to overdo it. And I definitely want to take it easy, on my kidney. So you just have to just make those sacrifices to ensure that you're doing everything you can to protect your kidneys, even in my situation as an Olympic athlete. And then the other side of it, too, as far as the drugs are concerned, Yeah, that's definitely, that's a great question. The thing that you have to do, or what I've found I have to do, because I also had stem cell treatment for my kidneys. And in any case, I didn't end up taking steroids, the corticosteroids or immunosuppressive drugs. Mm-hmm. But if I did, what I would be allowed to do is file what's called a therapeutic use exemption.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With the Anti-Doping Commission?
Yes, it's called it's like a TUE for the abbreviation. And basically what you're saying to them is that I have to do this thing in order to, for my health reasons. If I don't, this is something that not doing it could jeopardize my health. And they typically are going to argue against that if you can prove it. And obviously my situation with an official diagnosis of a terminal disease, I got a problem for my stem cell treatment, and they were just like, okay, that's totally fine. Because stem cells actually are kind of somewhat of a performance enhancement as mm-hmm. well, or right. performance enhancer.
Right.
And so when we filed the TUE, you obviously get all the right people involved, like your doctors and stuff. It was approved, and there was no question after that, you know, about it.
Okay.
So that's the process you'd have to go through, is show, you know, proof that you need it.
Right,
from a health standpoint.
And you're saying that the some of the medications will reduce the amount of damage that your body is actually doing to the kidney, which makes it sound mm-hmm. like an autoimmune disease.
Right.
So
yeah.
in that case, even if you had a kidney transplant, the new kidney would be likely to be attacked as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the scary thing about the kidney disease, our kidney disease right now. And it is, in my opinion, in many ways, it's a health epidemic, because mm-hmm. So many people are being diagnosed, new people are being diagnosed every year. And a lot of people, just like myself, honestly, if I wasn't seeing a doctor regularly, I would not have known mm-hmm. that I had the disease, probably until I actually started to experience the symptoms, which is typically like way too far into the progression of the disease. But yeah, with the drugs, the great thing is the idea is to slow down the progression
okay.
as much as possible to help your body to do that. But it does seem like it still comes back, you know, for a lot of people after you know, a certain period of time. I don't want to say what the average, I guess the average might be 7 to 10 years, but everybody is different in terms of how the body is going to respond when they do get a new kidney.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that I've read quite a bit about and spoke with those who are kidney transplant recipients. And it's really a little bit scared me, because I was like, gosh, if I have to go through that, I wouldn't want to go through it more than once. But that's not always the case. Sometimes it does come back, you know?
Right, right.
Well, and John, how do you, what helps you cope when, I mean, this is a lot to take on. And
as a young guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, as a very young, fit gentleman, what helps you cope?
Gosh, this is the part of the story that's really hard, I guess, to talk about or explain, because unless you've ever been told something like this, like you have a terminal disease, it's really hard to explain like what that does to you psychologically. But it was pretty tough. I had to take a step back, because I was young, but I've been, you know, I guess from the age of 14, all up to the age of 26, I was, you know, so 12 years chasing a dream that I had, and pretty much achieving that dream of becoming an Olympian and one of the best runners in the world. And then right immediately after that, I'm being told that I have a terminal disease, and that who knows, you know, basically doctors like, you know, and you do your homework, it's like, you don't know how quickly this is going to progress. And at some point I'm going to have to be living on dialysis and waiting for a kidney transplant. And this is within months of making my first Olympic team.
Wow.
It was pretty devastating, you know, and it took me years actually to really be okay with, not necessarily be okay with it, but just to kind of like comprehend what happened. It honestly affected me quite a bit mentally. And I wish I would have sought out some type of help from that standpoint, in terms of just having somebody to really talk to, not just friends and family, but a professional, and say, mm-hmm. okay, Because that helps, but you don't want to burden your friends and family. So I know that in these situations, I know now that in these situations, it's probably better to have gone and seen somebody to work through what was taking me, I think, more or less 12 years to understand what it really meant and what I should have done with it sooner, you know?
Yeah, I'm sorry that they didn't, you know, that your healthcare team didn't suggest it. I know for people that are actually going to be receiving a transplant, it's a requirement.
And for people that are donating.
Yeah, and for people that are donating.
I had to see a psychiatrist before I could donate my kidney because they wanted to make sure that that I knew what I was doing and, you know, knew what I was getting into. And I mean, it was quite a process.
But I think anytime you're given a diagnosis like that, it should be,
If somebody,
integrated.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm very sorry that didn't happen. And if you want to talk to somebody, there's plenty of people out there.
Yeah, we just interviewed
Frank King.
Frank King. He's called the Mental Health Comedian. You can find him online. And he's coming out with a book next month about mental health care for men.
Specifically for men.
And he said that a lot of men just feel like they've got to shoulder the burden and they've got to carry on and not really share with anybody what they're going through. And he said that's a big mistake. And he and two other professionals went out and wrote a series of books on this. So that book will be coming out next month. You can look him up, the Mental Health Comedian. Mental health, we're finding, is equally important as any other health condition. So we're trying to cover.
I agree.
We're trying to cover mental health issues as well on our show. But go ahead, Ron. We'll get you back on there. Yeah,
John. I hope you don't mind if we switch gears here for a minute. But in your bio it says you are an English language and literature major. Or you were at UCLA. What piqued your interest in marketing and what inspired you to start your company, Go Be More?
Yeah, as far as marketing goes, I think that my passion for marketing has come from my passion for people. I really do love sharing information. I love inspiring people to find the information that they need to live their best life. And I think that with marketing, that's really the responsibility that any professional marketing person has is to find creative ways to help people to understand and find information that they need to live a good, healthy life and to find things that are of value or could be of value to their lives. And, you know, to the English literature major at UCLA, that was something where I was passionate about reading, passionate about writing, wanted to develop my skills in that regard so that I could do more with that passion, you know, that art form when I got older. And, of course, being in marketing, and I'm also very much like an ideas person, being in marketing and thinking of something like Go Be More, which was inspired by my experiences with Nike when I was a professional athlete or sponsored athlete under them for about 5 years. They, I thought about being branded and I loved Nike. I loved being an athlete of Nike. I was very proud of, you know, being sponsored by the biggest, you know, apparel company or shoe company in the world. And, but I wanted something else, you know. I wanted to do a little bit more with what I was representing in terms of like adding to that, you know, adding to that beautiful opportunity that they provided, and that's why Go Be More came about, was a reflection more of my philosophy, my personal philosophy, and what I share in my speeches, which is basically chasing dreams and being trying to become more of who you were born to be. And I felt like I wanted to be able to say that in something that represented me from a symbolic standpoint. And I didn't, you know, Nike's not lying. It's somebody else's idea. I felt like, well, something's going to be branding me I might as well come up with my own brand.
Sure.
So that's what happens when you get into marketing. You start speaking your own stuff, you know, and that's what happened with Gopi Moore.
Okay. And I did see that on your website, you were also helping to support the Australian, those, you know, having to deal with the wildfires over there. And that was really wonderful.
Yeah, we definitely, you know, this we what Gopi Moore is really all about is trying to find ways to help people be more, and be more, not only primarily it's about being more who you were born to be, like being more of that person that you feel inside of you, that sometimes a lot of times we put in the box because we're trying to be, even on a subconscious level, I think mainly on a subconscious level, we're trying to be like what we're told to be or convinced to be by all the stuff that's bombarding us as far as information. But what I want to do is kind of wake people up a little bit and say, hey, you, whatever is inside of you is what the world really needs. Mm-hmm. And we need you to be more of that every day, to go be more of that every day. And one of the main things is I've always been about charity and philanthropy. And I'm like, it's not just about giving money. It is about giving time, actually. And it's about finding ways to make that a regular part of your life. It shouldn't be something that's outstanding. And I think it should be as normal as drinking water and breathing air, helping people, being there for one another, being a part of a community, acting like a global community, truly a community, even on a global scale, by being there for one another and looking at these challenges and problems and not pretending like you're separate from it. If it's not affecting you directly, it's affecting all of us, you know, any problem out there. And I'm like, the idea of saying go be more charitable is one of the five big things that we push as far as like aspects of your life. If you're not charitable, we want to inspire you to be more charitable and show you ways to do that. And Go Be More Australia is definitely something we're going to be pushing even harder for many years. Just even when the fires die down and go away completely, that's just when the work begins, in my opinion. There's so much that they're going to need. And it's going to be years, take years to really come back from what has happened, I think, for that country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said, John. I wish more people actually felt the same way you do. I think the world would be a better place.
Oh, yeah.
With everything,
I hope we can inspire more people to be that way, honestly, because it's in all of us. I think it's in all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. You do sound like a pretty busy person. How are you able to find balance to take time for yourself and your needs without stretching yourself too thin with everything that you have going on?
You know, I honestly just take time for myself. You kind of have to have a schedule and stick to it. And so I do take time for myself every day, early in the morning. And I also just do things for myself every night before I go to bed. And it's honestly as simple as doing a little bit of journaling, obviously training, and working out, and you know, just making sure that you do take that time to stop everything else that you're doing. Cause I found that no matter what's going on, no matter when there's deadlines, ultimately, none of that stuff really matters if you're not taking care of yourself mentally and physically, and emotionally as well. And so you have to slow down, and I do a lot of meditation now. I do a lot of journaling, and I do a lot of exercise still, and just to make sure that I'm taking really good care of myself and making sure that I feel energetic every day to tackle the things that are on my plate.
Okay. That's, yeah, another, if we could be more like that, I think everybody would have a better understanding of themselves, and that would be wonderful. Do you have any additional tips, hints, or helpful advice for our listeners? And how can our listeners learn more about you, your journey with FSGS, and how can they find their own Go Be More clothing?
Yeah, no, thank you. As far as tips goes for you guys, for your listeners, I think the main thing is do not take your health for granted. Even if you don't feel like something's going wrong, it's important to speak with your doctor on a regular basis. It's also important to know your family's history, health history. So do your homework on that as well. I think it's hard for everybody, or for most people, to take the time to actually do that homework, you know, talk to family members, ask questions about your family's health history, and to also make sure that you're seeing your doctor on a regular basis and asking for specific types of tests that might help you check if there's anything going on with your health as it relates to certain diseases that might be actually common in your family. But that's a great place to start. And that'll lead to you asking more questions, doing more research, and again, just paying more attention to your health. And so that's my advice, is definitely don't just wait until something feels like it's going wrong. Actually be proactive and try to do prevention as the best form of medicine by doing the homework early, you know. And as far as learning about me and you know, obviously we'd love more people to discover Go Be More Apparel. And you can go to gobemore.co. So that's what, you know, the website where you can learn more about my philosophy, things that we're creating as far as ways to help people go be more through personal growth with our website and our articles that we write. And then, of course, my story as well. There will be regular updates on social media, our social channels, but our website has quite a bit of information as well about my history and what I'm working on now and what we're doing with the company.
Okay, great, great. And we'll have links for that on our website as well.
And John, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today. We here at Podcast DX look forward to continuing to follow you on your journey, and we will definitely be rooting for you and all your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, you guys. It's a pleasure to meet all of you as well. I love what you guys are doing. And definitely looking forward to continuing to be a listener of your guys' podcast. It's wonderful, and I've really enjoyed the experience.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining the show. And if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast, or drop us a line about a podcast that you'd like us to do in the future. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.